I get a lot of bribe offers.
You know, not direct
bribe offers, but like, can I like give these guys? Mm-hmm. And of course, like, I have to turn out everything. And my wife is very unhappy about it. And she says, like, need to extend some care.
How much did Becca pay you to get her incredible ranking?
Because million.
I mean, she was ranked higher than me. And I thought,
not anymore. I don't think
exchanged here at this point.
Yeah, Barry, you need to be more. It's add a zero in your operation.
Welcome to Under Embargo, the podcast that says the quiet part out loud about PR, communications, and the chaos in between. Hosted by two of LinkedIn's most connected comms pros, Becca Chambers, a no BS corporate comms exec with raging ADHD, and Parry Hedrick, founder of tech PR firm Crackle PR. This show brings it all. Real talk, sharp insights, and the kind of industry truths they don't put in press releases. No fluff, no filters, no f***s given. This is Under Embargo. Let's get into it.
Hello, and welcome to our fourth episode of Under Embargo. Yes, very exciting. And today we have a super exciting guest named Jeremy Boissonneau. I don't know if I did that right.
Woo!
There I did. Yes. Woo! Practiced. He is the CEO and co-founder of Favicon, which is an AI-powered creator marketing platform that has recently started blowing up all over the socials. He has been the co-founder and CEO actually at a number of startups throughout his career, which is super interesting. As I was stalking your LinkedIn profile, I would love to hear about that. And he has become one of the leading voices in the kind of evolving, maturing creator economy, especially on LinkedIn. So I've learned a ton from Jeremy just in the past few months that we've been connected, and I'm super excited to have him on today. He's joining us from Paris, France, our first international guest. So thank you for making time for us this evening, I guess, and welcome to Under Embargo.
Thank you so much for having me. Really, it's an honor, and I'm really excited to have this discussion with you guys about the creator economy and whatever you want when it comes to influencer marketing.
Great to have you here.
So let me kick off just with, I would love to hear from you kind of, what is Favicon? How did it come to be? How did you get involved in that? It's such a, you know, important, evolving space right now. So I just love to hear kind of the backstory.
Wait. To be honest, if you told me like a few years ago that my job would consist in rating people, I would be like, no, there's no way you would do that. It really, you know, like many startups kind of like came by chance. You know, it's a succession of, you know, like kind of like mini pivots. So at first we started like, you know, like a regular influencer marketing platform where it was more about identifying influencers. And we did like, I think like 3 years ago, we did a LinkedIn ranking. But it was more like a marketing stunt. So literally we did it, but like the old fashioned way. I had an intern. I told her, okay, can you look up all the influencers? Because it was in France only at the time. So look up for influencers on LinkedIn in France. We spent like 2 weeks looking for them, like manually. And we released this ranking in France and it really blew up. So we're like, oh, people seem to love, you know, LinkedIn influencers. So, you know what? Let's try it on a global level, on a global stage. We did it for international influencers. It took us like a month because, as you can imagine, it was even harder endeavor because it was, again, a manual process, so very tedious. And it blew up really like crazy. And that's where we thought like, okay, there's something going on with LinkedIn influencers. Remember, it was 3 years ago. So it was really, really the start of B2B influencer marketing. So that's where we decided to kind of like make a new platform where we would really take into account B2B influencers, so not only B2C. And on top of that, there was like AI rising up. So there was like this combination of AI, B2B influencers. So we decided to make this new platform based on these, on those two things. And essentially that's how new Favicon, you know, came up, this new platform. And yeah, it's been working really well because I think there's a huge right now surge of B2B influencers. But again, it's not so much about B2B influencers. It's more about how influencer marketing is evolving. I feel like we're entering a stage where anybody is a creator. So we are like, before that, it was like Instagram influencers, YouTube influencers, etc. But now that B2B influencers exist, it means that any employee, any CEO, anyone really can create content. Before that, you had to know how to make videos. to be on Instagram or YouTube. And now you can just write anything, which means that the industry is so much more interesting, much bigger. You can make podcasts, you can make newsletters, you can create articles on LinkedIn, which makes the industry way more interesting. And that's really what we're trying to do with Favicon at the moment.
It's so awesome. I mean, seriously, the first time I found out about it because somebody posted, right? It has such a virality effect because people are like, oh, there's a ranking. I can go see my ranking. And then they want to see theirs, right? If somebody shares their own, they want to go see what where they're. And that's how I found Favicon. Is somebody
I think you told me about it, Becca, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. I'm like, hey, dude, look, you're ranked really high in this category. And you know, I can't tell you how many kind of side conversations I've had with people, Jeremy, where they're like, have you guys looked on Favicon? Is this right? Am I actually the top 1% of something? Like, it's just, it's kind of this constant chatter, which I think is so interesting. And from where you sit, obviously you can see because people are paying for this service, right? So how have you seen, even in like the last 6 months, has this really like taken off in a more meaningful way?
So we have no sales in the team. We're a team of six people. People are amazed when they know we're only six people. We're 100% PLG, only inbound. Again, we don't no outreach, nothing, etc. So we literally base everything on virality. So what we did last year, when we found out that our rankings were like really like successful, people were like liking it, we decided to hire that data scientist who came in the team for like 6 months, and we remade the whole thing to make it 100% transparent and to make it 100% bulletproof. And when we released this new version, I think it was September last year, it blew up even more because now people know that we're not full of shit. It's completely transparent. They know that, okay, there's this score, but they know exactly what the score is all about. Because before that, people thought, you know, like, yeah, this is not serious.
Kind of nebulous. Yeah,
it was very nebulous, but people were like, okay, Favicon score, I have no idea what that is. We're not Forbes. So we didn't have the brand, you know, we could use the credibility, but now that everything is public, and again, it took us a lot of efforts, like, because the reason why we're the only company pretty much doing it is because essentially it doesn't make sense in terms of economics, right? Because people don't pay for rankings. So why would you spend literally a year dedicating efforts, employees into making rankings? But because it was always for us a long-term decision, kind of like, you know, like sacrificing the whole year so that now we're in a good spot. And that's really hard for another company to come into this market because the good luck with making rankings. So that's what we did. And of course, on top of that, we launched a creator plan because before that, it was only for brands, right? But we realized that there were so many creators asking for their rankings that we decided to do this plan on top of the business, like the regular offer. And honestly, it was the best decision ever because now people are not necessarily paying because, you know, you have a free trial, but still now they can gain access to the platform, retrieve their rankings, whether they pay or not, it doesn't really matter because in the end, they're just going to share their rankings, which is like free advertisement for us. So it's really a virtual circle. And yeah, we were happy about this model. And I call it often the ego business. And trust me, the ego business is much, much bigger than people think. It's crazy how much people are willing to be high in the ranking. I got like tons of messages from like big CEOs, like millionaires who are like asking me how to, you know, move up the rankings. I'm super mad because they're not high enough.
Wow.
I get hate messages every week.
When you start getting the hate messages, that's when you know you've really made it. That's when you know.
Seriously, sometimes I'm like, dude, you're like a millionaire. I'm broke. Who cares if you're like high in the ranking? And also I got a lot of bribe offers, you know, like not direct bribe offers, but like, can I like in disguise? Mm-hmm. And of course, like, I have to turn out everything. And my wife is really unhappy about it. And she says, like, need to accept, who cares?
How much did Becca pay you to get her incredible ranking? Because
millions.
I mean, she was ranked higher than me. And I thought,
not anymore. I don't think
money exchanged here at this point.
Yeah, Perry, you need to be more, add a zero in your offer if you want to be.
So a question about kind of the gamification piece. When I think of being a creator myself and having somebody in my orbit like a Becca, like, you know, we're kind of playing the game to see who's going to pass who and all that. That's a fun piece of it. It's like the gamification of your personal brand. My question to you is, do you support creators from a validation standpoint to help them get brand deals, for example. So like you're providing that air cover, that validation, like according to Favicon, I'm number one in this niche category. Do you take it a step further than that, or is that part of your roadmap?
It's a very good question. We actually about to release a new campaign feature where you'd be able to reach out to brands directly on the platform and vice versa. So that's something we had on the roadmap for a long time. And obviously, getting rankings is good. Also on the platform, you can get, you know, these nice gamification features. But in the end, it's all about money, right? It's all about making money. It's all about getting those sweet brand deals. So we already have this like spotlight feature where you can have like this kind of like resume where you use your data to say, okay, I'm awesome, I'm like number two in this niche, etc. But it's not enough. And yeah, that's the end goal for us, is to have this platform where you can get paid, when you can sign contracts, where brands be able to reach out to you. They'll be able also to publish campaigns, because lots of them are doing campaigns. So that's what we're about to release. And we're talking about weeks tops.
Yeah. Wow. Weeks?
Yeah, I'm excited. Weeks.
I was going to say, I like that you figured out somewhere in this journey that focusing on the creators and the relationships with them is really valuable for you, because I do think there are a lot of platforms coming on the scene who are all about the business side, right? For the people who are looking for creators, which is great. That is where the money is to be made, right? Like the individuals aren't where the money is to be made. However, what you've done is you've like just reverse engineered it, and you'll end up getting way more of the business people because you have not only the solid rankings, but you have the creators coming to your platform. Like your platform is the only creator platform that I go to, because it's the one that's built for me to engage with, not just for me to go like put my stuff up there and somebody finds me, you know? And I think that that is a real differentiator for you guys and pretty cool.
Yeah, I think from the very beginning, what we've done is really counterintuitive. Again, when it comes to, you know, like economic, like financial strategies, we didn't, you know, target brands. We did those rankings, which is not an essential feature for anyone. But again, it's because we've always had this long-term vision in mind, and credibility takes time. Also gaining the, you know, confidence of creators is also something that takes time. And honestly, we are obsessed. I mean, I'm obsessed with creators because I really believe that like the industry was a bit unfair when we really got involved in it, as in it was kind of like a oligopoly, you know, of those creators, always the same creators getting always the same deals. And I really wanted, you know, like to make it way more democratic in a way, so that anybody can get the chance. And also on a more global stage, I think something, a big difference to other platforms is that we're not just focused on the US or like on English speaking markets. We really try to, you know, reach out to other markets, other industries. And yeah, I think that's the reason why we gained the trust of creators. They knew also with the, you know, the public algorithm that we are serious when it comes to rankings. So yeah, that was difficult. It took us, again, a lot of pain and efforts for a year, but I think that it's paying off, so I'm pretty happy about it.
What do you think about LinkedIn as it relates to the creator economy? So most of these platforms, there's some way for creators to make money, right? TikTok, you know, you name it, Instagram. People are capitalizing and making money. Now, to be fair, when I'm on LinkedIn, I'm actually making money too, but it's through more of a social selling model where I talk enough about my industry. People believe what I have to say. They trust me. They contact me, and I close the deal that way. But LinkedIn isn't directly paying me for anything. And having said that, people like me, Becca, you, Jeremy, with tons of followers, creating tons of content, are making zero money from LinkedIn. What is your take on that model? And do you think it's fair? And where do you see it heading?
Okay, it may be controversial, but I think it's fair because compared to other platforms, being a creator is not a full-time job, right? Like you said, you have a job, Becca has a job. And I think what made influencer marketing not effective on other platforms in the past few years, the reason why it's had a bad press as well, is because you would have all these Instagram influencers, for instance, making a lot of brand deals. And essentially, the whole content was about, you know, making money, landing deals left and right, which made their audience completely saturated. And I don't know if you're aware of saturation rates, which is a pretty important KPI in influencer marketing, but the higher the saturation rate, the less effective the influencer becomes for new campaigns. And the reason why LinkedIn is so powerful when it comes to influencer marketing is that you don't need the money, right? You already have your expertise. You don't need to just do influencer marketing campaigns every week to make a living, which makes it more selective and which makes it more powerful when you work for a brand, because your audience knows that you're serious about it. And also, since LinkedIn is such a serious platform, since it's a professional platform, people know that if you work for a brand, it's probably because you believe in it, right? Because you wouldn't risk your credibility. While on Instagram, on YouTube, TikTok, etc., where if you do a bad campaign, people will forget after a few days because you just move on to new stuff, new content, they don't care. So there is no accountability, whereas on LinkedIn there is. And actually, it's really funny because now that we're starting to see more and more campaigns, right, even on LinkedIn, I'm starting to see a few influencers who are starting to have a bad press. Because, you know, they're not effective because, you know, how lots of them are using pods. They're using, like, they're not really influential in the end. And I'm starting to, you know, to know, okay, this guy is not really serious. Don't work with him, etc. So we are entering the phase where influencers need to be careful as well. And those influencers I'm talking about, they're literally just doing campaigns. They don't have, like, expertise in the first place. And that's these kind of influencers brands need to be careful about.
You know what else I noticed is, and I'm sure this will change, I'm sure in a year this will be different, but, you know, I get approached now that I have a following on LinkedIn, I get approached by brands, and what they want to pay me for access to a super engaged senior audience is embarrassing. Like, it's not worth it for me to, like you say, saturate my audience with ads because they want to give me $150 to, you know, I mean, I tell, like, I think I am just starting to kind of like dabble in like making real deals, because to me, it's not worth hundreds of dollars to start spamming my audience, right? Like, maybe if there's a real brand synergy and they want to pay me not just for access to my audience, but also for my time. And I think that they're like that in LinkedIn hasn't happened yet. Like, there are certain brands that are clearly starting to hire people to start finding influencers and finding micro influencers and all that. But what they want to pay people is not even worth the time that the person would have to spend on whatever the content is, let alone the access to their audience, which is what is the point of it anyway?
And so, to dilute your own credibility, because exactly. People are like, what is this nonsense?
If you're going to pay me $10,000 to advertise your tech company, like, sure, that's a different story than like, hey, will you do a presentation and plug my company and we're going to give you $250 and we're going to retweet you and we're going to repost it on LinkedIn. And I'm like, what? Why would I do that?
I think it's because they are equating LinkedIn influencers with like Instagram influencers. And since, you know, like the average number of followers is much, 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 much lower. Like, if you work with an influencer on Instagram with 50,000 followers, it's pretty really like
but not expensive at all. Isn't a LinkedIn follower way more valuable than an Instagram follower?
It is, but you know, your average marketer or something, maybe they don't know about this. So they think like, okay, she has 50,000 followers. She, on Instagram, it's $200. So let's ask for $200. You know, it doesn't get more complicated than that.
Actually, I have a question specific to what Becca just asked, which is there like some metric that you track or could track that's like influence of follower? You know, because to Becca's point, like, I know that most of the people that are following me tend to be at least manager and above, and much of them are C-suite executives from some of the biggest brands in the country and in the world. And these are movers and shakers, C-suite people who have a lot more cachet, a lot more clout than, say, you know, Susie, who's dancing and showing her belly button on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm wondering, is there some metric that exists today or that you could create that would show for a creator the strength of their audience to help them fashion better and more targeted and more lucrative, frankly, brand deals?
Yeah. So right now we don't do it, but we are going to do it soon. Also, we are going to add a new KPI where essentially we're going to look at who engages with your content. And then there's going to be like a rating of your network. So that's something we have on the roadmap. Because like you said, the bad experiences I've heard of lately when it comes to influencer marketing on LinkedIn, it's always the same story. It's always the audience that's really bad. you have on LinkedIn. Honestly, I could give you tons of examples of people with lots of followers, but like many of them, most of them are in India or like not, you know, in their industry at all. Yeah, I've had this example of obviously I'm not going to say the name, but a big influencer in Europe. And the brand was really disappointed because they realized that, yeah, most of the audience was not relevant at all. And the only issue right now, the only downside with LinkedIn, if you want to do influencer marketing, is really so easy to cheat. It's so easy to play around with the algorithm. Lots of people do it. So you have to be extra careful when you're picking influencers. And that's actually super easy. Just look at the content. Just look at the last post. Look at the top 15 comments.
It seems to me like LinkedIn would actually be an easier place to find quality because people are posting once a day, right? Like that's why a post matters so much more. If you're posting once a day and LinkedIn told me this week I'm supposed to post 4 times a week max. Yeah, right. That's not going to happen. Yeah. Yeah.
Awkward.
So 4 times a day is too much, I'm hearing. Oops.
Same.
Oops. Same. But like that means that each one of my posts is way more valuable than the 19 posts that somebody's doing every day on Instagram or Twitter or whatever. You know, I just think that it's very interesting that we know that influencer marketers at brands haven't figured out that, to Perry's point, that like senior executives whose names you can see who liked your post as real people is not a more valuable metric than, or not a more valuable audience than, you know, Instagram likes. Seems obvious.
Yeah, 100% agree. And engagement on LinkedIn is crucial. When it comes to, you know, the algorithm that right now really, really favors lots of comments, lots of likes, which is why many people are gaming the algorithm, asking lots of people to engage, to comment. And it's super easy to do that. So we even identified last year like a huge network of like not fake pages, but like kind of, I can't go into details, but we were like big network where people would just, you know, comment and like each other. And we're talking about pages with thousands of. Yeah, like a pod with like thousands of followers for each pages. And then you would like at the comment, the page would comment, and then you would have like 50 people for each page comment. I mean, it's really like huge network going on. And so you have to be really careful. And when you're saying, like, Becca, I agree with you in terms of followers are way more valuable on LinkedIn. But also it's super easy to get lots of followers if you cheat. So,
but isn't that true for like Instagram and Twitter too? With LinkedIn, it's easier to tell who's phony. I just feel like it's so, yes, you have to spend a little time doing it or you have to have people like you. I feel like you should create some like news around it, right? Like make some like call people out for pods. Like I feel like people love that kind of stuff online and you have like actual data to support it, not just observations.
You know, I keep having people telling me to do this, but the big issue is that it's super easy to get banned on LinkedIn. And whenever you're negative, your odds of getting banned are really bad, are really high. So if I call out someone, let's say tomorrow, you can be like 100% sure that they're going to ask all their network to report my profile.
Yeah.
And my profile will be done within 2 days. Because thing is, they do it, you know, like they ban the automatic way. So basically what happens is that if you get a lot of people, you know, like exposing your profile on LinkedIn, you will get banned automatically. And then it's such a pain to retrieve your account. Yep. Then you get like shadow banks, etc. So unfortunately, it's not worth the risk. And which is why we've also decided to, you know, talk positively about creators, talk about rising stars like yourself a few months ago, rather than, you know, spending our time, you know, saying this guy is bad. We just, it's not worth it, to be honest.
Do you have any direct access to LinkedIn and the people who are kind of algorithmically tweaking the magic? Or are you like everybody else waiting to kind of see what happens?
We're kind of like judges, so we want to stay neutral. So we obviously have many people from LinkedIn using our platform in different markets, etc. But we don't have direct access to the secret sauce. And to be honest, I'm not even sure that people at LinkedIn have access to that. I feel like it's a huge machine where even people in LinkedIn have no idea who does what kind of. It's really funny. It's a funny company. So no, we don't.
The algorithm piece a lot. And I don't know what goes into it, how many people are involved, but sometimes I'm like, maybe there's just some dude like named Ned in some shack just tweaking things, and he alone knows what's going on. No one else knows anything until he rolls it out.
I fully believe that, kind of. And it's, you can always tell when he's messing with the algorithm too, right? Like, for those of us who are there all the time,
like,
and like,
like Ned's girlfriend breaks up with him. He's like, screw it. No one's getting any engagement for 2 months.
Zero impressions, zero. Like, totally. Ned's having a bad day, and so he tanks everybody's posts. I love it. So I guess on LinkedIn, though, like, what do you think? Okay, LinkedIn's not going to pay creators. Do you think that, like, this time next year, we're going to see, like, it will be a totally different world for LinkedIn creators?
Okay, so you remember LinkedIn launching all those creator programs, having all those creator managers last year or 2 years ago, and they kind of like decided to give up on them for a good reason. Is that, I mean, not a good reason necessarily, but the reason is that they don't want CEOs, athletes, public figures. They don't want them to be called creators because it's not positive for them. Like, you're the CEO of Walmart. You don't want to be called a creator, right? So that's the reason why they switch more like to thought leaders, because it's more positive for them. And right now, the obsession of LinkedIn is to attract those people on the platform. I don't know if you've noticed lately, you've had all these big YouTubers, all these big athletes, like stars, joining the platform. And that's what LinkedIn wants, because they want to become this like high-level content creation platform where, you know, especially with the downfall of X. I mean, I used to be a huge Twitter fan, so I'm really sad of what Twitter has become, but it's a shadow of its former self. And if you're like, if you're a content creator and like even like a public figure, Twitter is not that interesting anymore. And I think LinkedIn knows that it's a huge opportunity, and that's the people they're trying to attract. So I don't think they're doing that much to, you know, like drive content creation on LinkedIn. It's more about attracting high level people, including CEOs and public figures right now. And I think that's the reason why many creators are frustrated with the platform right now, because honestly, I don't think it's their priority right now. They don't want, you know, they don't want LinkedIn to become this place where they would give you tips to, you know, to with the algorithm. They would give you tips to create content, because that's not what they want. They don't want people to create content. They want people to create high quality content. And that makes a huge difference, because essentially not everyone can create high level content. You see the difference?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Can I switch platforms a little bit? What about Blue Sky? Are you guys dealing with Blue Sky?
Yeah. So I still think Twitter is too big to fail. And there's no right alternative at the moment. And you have this network effect, which makes it almost impossible, even for like a Blue Sky or anything else, to really, you know, be a true alternative. I think right now you have Threads, but it's more like as a, you know, like for Instagram influencers, if you want, you know, share your thoughts, you have Threads, which has I think it's quite successful as like an alternative social media. But I don't believe in Blue Sky. I don't believe in Mastodon, because again, it's too big, Twitter. And actually in the last few weeks, I've noticed kind of like a surge on Twitter, like influencers coming back, including like left-wing liberal figures, again, posting, because I think they're starting to realize that they're just not being heard on other platforms. I mean, I've used Blue Sky, but honestly, you reach no one. And in the end, it's you need a platform where everybody is, the press is, etc. So, yeah, Twitter is not what it used to be, but it's still there. It's going to be hard to have a replacement for.
Yeah, I use Blue Sky primarily for like my own mental health. I just find it more enjoyable than X. But I, to your point, like if there's a huge platform where there are no representative voices from all sides, then at some point those who are not participating in the conversation feel left out and then just go there, because it's like, what are you going to do? Just not be heard? So I might as well go get in bed with the pig, right? But so you don't, so you're saying Mastodon, Blue Sky, all these, they're too small, they don't have a big enough footprint, so they're not factored into your sort of algorithm.
No, and B2B influencers, so they have LinkedIn right now. So, you know, like those people who are on Twitter, especially with business, marketing, etc., now they're on LinkedIn, right? They're all like flocked to LinkedIn, that's for sure. But now if they're looking for an alternative, They're just going to use newsletters, like podcasts, this kind of stuff. But I feel like the energy, etc., it takes to use other platforms of CrossFit, even though many people repurpose for sure. But yeah, again, it's only a fraction of the audience you can get on X. I mean, I did a thread a few months ago on X. I got like 100 million views. It gave me tons of opportunities. I spoke to Vanity Fair because of that. And it would have never happened on Blue Sky, you know? So, yeah.
Poor Blue Sky.
But like, is that a matter of the platform or is it just a matter of time? Like, yes, Twitter is the incumbent. It's been there for 15 years. Of course, it has more people and right now more influence or whatever. But if it continues to be terrible and, you know, people like us don't go back, let's say, you know, let's say 20% of people who left come back at some point. Like, I don't know. It feels like the other people are going somewhere and eventually LinkedIn's going to capture some amount of them. Blue Sky's going to capture. Like, will the audience just be more fragmented? And I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to ask. I don't see myself or most of my friends going back to Twitter, right? So like, I'm just trying to figure out like, what is, not that there's going to be an alternative, but it like, what is the future of social? Is it just that there are smaller networks that are more niche, that are more specific, or will there be a replacement? Like, I don't know. Nobody.
Well, I think social media at the moment is really in a bad place. It's super fragmented. Very like, if you go on Twitter, it's very right-wing oriented. If you go on Blue Sky, it's more like liberal. So you have, it's like people are, I don't know, like there's no social media where you can have like nice debates, nice discussions, etc. Except for Blue Sky for sure, but there's no one, I mean, very, very few people using it at the moment. And then you have LinkedIn where everything has to be super polished.
Yeah.
So if you say like a cuss word, you're getting banned. So it's another extreme. So yeah, social media right now is super fragmented. There is no like social media where you could have like kind of like of everybody. But I still think that Twitter, I think it's going to go back to normal after a while. When Musk, at some point, I don't see Musk staying forever. I think like in the US right now, you know, like in terms of, not talking about politics, but I think like in 2-3 years, things will go back to normal because people will have experience, you know, like,
Jeremy is much more optimistic than some of us.
Keep talking, Jeremy. I like it.
Yeah, 2-3 years from his mouth, man. We're going back to normal.
No, but it's going to be like the midterms. People are, I think, are starting to realize. I mean, it's been a few months in the US. It's like it's kind of like a mess. It will just get worse. So my opinion is that in 2 years, people will be like, okay, so being woke is not that bad, and it's be like there's going to be like an anti-movement or something. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes, but I think it's going to be the same for socials. I think Twitter is really in a bad state right now, and it was even worse a few months ago. And again, I'm an avid user of Twitter because I'm a huge news fan. I mean, you know, I studied political science, economics, so I'm really interested in what's going on, and there's no alternative to Twitter when it comes to all this kind of stuff. And it was terrible a few months ago. It was just like right-wing people. Like we did a ranking for Twitter. And like, if you look at the top 200, and I'm not even kidding, 80% were like right-wing people, right-wing or like super conservative.
Not surprised at all.
Like crazy.
Joe Rogan, Shapiro, like all this crazy.
Guy. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I get very intense when I talk about it. But like when you look at the top 20, you had like people who were like Nazis almost.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I left. It's because every interaction I had there turned into absolute vitriol, like disgusting hate speech. And I am like, I don't go on the internet to like have controversy, like conversations, sure, but every single interaction turned into like just stuff that I like was harming my mental health just to read other people's words, right? Like,
yeah,
crazy shit.
Yeah.
When you create content on Twitter where you say you need your helmet, you need to like be ready. And
holy.
When I did like a thread a few weeks ago, someone like some mega people found it and they found my wife's Instagram and they left comments on saying, oh, wow, your husband did that. Wow, such an asshole. So yeah, I was like, hi.
I know.
Hi. Yeah, it wasn't crazy. Even like people
so
are crazy.
Let's do a quick palate cleanse here. Let's say you are somebody who is a little younger than me. I'm a very young man myself, but let's say you're even younger than me. And you're trying to establish a personal brand of your own. What tips would you give to someone who's looking at the tea leaves and saying, well, I guess every company that I've worked for isn't really my family because I got laid off. I guess, you know, my family laid off mom and dad. And I want to try to hedge my bets and kind of write my own destiny. How do you parlay that from an influence standpoint? What should I be doing if I'm trying to make a name for myself, have a personal brand? What are some things I should be thinking about doing?
Well, I mean, it depends on the story you have to tell, but definitely start with LinkedIn. And I always tell that in my employees, LinkedIn should be like a no-brainer for anyone right now to create content on. It's like your social resume, and you're missing out if you don't share your thoughts on LinkedIn. And then on top of that, again, it really depends on what you have to talk about, but something that's really underrated is YouTube. I feel like YouTube is a great channel. Even in influencer marketing, we've done studies and the return of investment with YouTubers small is huge, crazy, like much better than anything else. So yeah, like, and I think it's enough, honestly, when you're getting started.
A bit for B2B, like, is YouTube getting big for B2B or is it already big and I'm just like in the dark?
You've got more and more influencers taking up YouTube as a channel. You see a lot of LinkedIn influencers actually opening up a channel because there's a good synergy between YouTube and LinkedIn, and it's more serious than TikTok. Like, if you have to choose between YouTube and TikTok, you'd pick YouTube if you were like a B2B influencer. And I feel like right now the perfect like three social medias would be LinkedIn, YouTube, and then a newsletter on top of it. So if you have the three of them, that's like, for me as a content creator right now, B2B content creator, that's the three perfect social medias if you had to pick, because you get your own audience with the newsletter, you get the videos with YouTube, and then you get LinkedIn as like your social resume.
That's interesting.
Good advice.
Can I ask you on that note though, you're in the creator economy tech world now, and I know you've been going to events and stuff because I've been seeing on LinkedIn. What are the other tools that are coming out on the scene that are cool, like for creators or for, you know, people that are trying to build brands online?
Well, in the US, you get to know that Stan has been doing I don't know if you've heard of this company, but they're doing amazing.
Which like, company?
Stan for creators. Mm-mm. It's actually, honestly, I think the company I look up the most to. Crazy, like, he builds in public the CEO. They've been doing so great. So basically, it's like a platform for creators where you can build your own kit, to get deals for brands. And even though, like, they're a little bit of competitors to ourselves, it's okay. They're just a great company and they're doing amazing. So I feel like right now they're having a lot of traction if you want to check them out.
Yeah.
Apart from that, on the creator side, where you get the newsletter, you get Behave doing great on the newsletter segment. You get all those creator tools to make videos like Opus, Clip, etc. But on like on our segment, on direct segment, no, nothing that comes to mind. And
I think Opus is a good, like, that. Those are the kinds of things I wonder, like, who do you like? Just what brands do you see creators using more and more? Because I know that we like pass brands around, right? Like, I started using Opus because a bunch of my influencer friends were clearly part of their. Whatever it's called. What is it called when you do the
ambassador program?
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. The ambassador program. So I was all of a sudden seeing Opus everywhere, and then it switched to Descript, right? Or however you pronounce that place. Anyway, I think playing with all of these tools is like the most fun thing in the world. So that's why I was asking what if you saw any new things coming on the scene that I should play with. But I'm going to check out Stan now too.
Don't check it out too long though, because it's still a competitor to what we do at Favicon, especially now that we are launching this new campaign feature.
Very cool. Well, I'm excited for what you guys are coming up with next. It seems like every few weeks there's like something new on the platform, so I'm a fan anyway.
Yeah, thank you so much,
Perry. You were going to say something before I interrupted you.
I was going to ask about Shield AI, if you guys talk to them or integrate with them, or if that's just not in your wheelhouse.
Well, they've been in the industry for a while, probably the first real software to be on the LinkedIn influencer market. They're doing great. So, I mean, I haven't used it in a while, but they're like focused on analytics. Yeah. I think you have Perfect Post also, which is a great tool. You have the tool from what's the name of the tool? Offered Up also is a great tool.
I know Field and Andreas, and I've used that for I don't know probably 3 years now. So I guess they were kind of early in the game. I just didn't know.
Super early. Yeah. I mean, we do also do like a similar thing with our analytics part, but in terms of analytics, they're probably the best. Tool on the market right now.
Yeah, it's great to be able to see which posts perform the best and kind of repurpose those when you're feeling like you have nothing to say today. It's like, nice, I'm going to pluck that one that went crazy 6 months ago. Should we do the rapid round? Is that the point of the show we find ourselves at?
Jeremy, are you ready for the rapid fire questions that we ask all of our guests?
That sounds scary, but yes, go for it.
Very scary. And if you answer wrong, we send ejector somebody seat to your house. Yeah, right. Ejector seat. There you go.
I'm ready. Okay. I'm ready. Send it.
What is a myth or misconception about communications that drives you crazy? Or marketing or influencer?
Honestly, algorithm, I think, is overrated. People are way too obsessed with algorithm in general. And I think it's, people should stop caring about it and care more about their own content, etc. And yeah, that's that'd be definitely my answer.
Strong content cuts through the algo, basically. Just keep doing what you're doing and try to make it quality, right?
Yeah, exactly. Honestly.
That's a solid answer, and don't chase virality. Yep. Okay, number two, you get to erase one corporate buzzword from existence. What are you erasing?
What do you mean by corporate word?
Like
synergies and words.
Yeah. Or let's take this offline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. Maybe like family, you know, as a team, like when you have a company, you say, this is my family or something. That's something I hate. And that's something I always tell the people in my company. We're not a family. You have a family, you have a wife, you have a husband, you have children. That's your family. And I hate it when brands are trying to pretend they're like a family because it's something completely different.
Totally. And awesome. Your family does not pay you. I wish my family would pay me. You know, that would be.
And sometimes you have to keep a family member around even when you can't stand that
family
member.
Can't fire them. No.
Yes, exactly.
Bummer. Okay. Next. You are about to give a presentation in front of 50,000 people. What is your walkout song or walk-in song?
Wow. That's a good question. The Killers, I think. Like a rock, like probably I love English rock, so I would probably use something like very punchy and English rock band from the 70s or 80s or something like to make it, you know, to make the biggest entrance possible.
Love it. Mine's a Queen song, so I'm with you on that.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah. Okay. You have to give a TED talk on anything but influencer marketing or Favicon or anything. What would your topic be?
Politics. Easy, political science or politics, that's what I've studied, that's what I'm passionate about. And I could talk for us about this, or history also, or philosophy also. Like I'm a super curious person, I did several degrees, and yeah, I could talk about pretty much anything. That's what I was, I studied, so.
You're in good company, yeah, us too.
The political world is so boring right now, what would you possibly say?
Yeah, it's fascinating. What's going on is fascinating. Pretty scary, but fascinating.
I mean, just to interject quickly, as I am also a political science major and thought I wanted to be in politics growing up until I realized what it actually, with the thick skin that I would need to actually be in politics. But being a political scientist or somebody who's super engaged in history, it is disturbing to live through this timeline in history. When you really understand the context of it all, it makes it, I don't know, scarier.
It's very interesting because in France, I don't know about the US, but so I studied political science, and honestly, like the smart people, actually, none of them went to politics because they realized that it's not intellectually stimulating, you know?
Yep.
And the thing is, I feel like we're ending up with this generation where people are into politics and the bad people.
Yes.
You know, like, not, I don't know if I'm
making
sense.
I agree with you.
But, and that's the problem we're having with our politicians right now is that, like, the smart ones are, like, doing companies, they're working the other stuff, because honestly, who would want to be into politics
exactly.
right now?
That's exactly it.
Exactly. Who would put themselves in that or their families through that or whatever when they could go just live their life and get rich doing something else? 100%. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like, again, I'm not a Trump fan for sure, but like, I feel so bad, for instance, with Kamala Harris, because honestly, she did whatever she could, but in the end, it didn't matter. So much energy for nothing, because people are not just listening to, you know, arguments. They're not listening to... No. It's not about who's right or who's not. So in the end, it's so frustrating.
So frustrating. We are in a post information world now. We're just going
post-truth
with vibes.
World.
Post-truth world, right. Yes.
That's also, I think my degree in political science is also what's driving us at Favicon to move from an influence from marketing platform to more like a creator, not a creator, but like creator intelligence platform. You know, we released this... politician levels where you can know if someone is conservative, etc. And I feel like that's driving us to do even more stuff in this space, because I think it's very important in our societies today to understand who talks about what, who supports what, and we'll go even deeper in this regard.
Yeah, can I just, I know this is, we're kind of doing this breezy little lightning round thing, but one thing I saw recently that I was struck by was a company called Media Matters, and they had this graph that showed conservative voices versus liberal voices.
Yeah, I saw
and
that.
And how saturated, since we've used that word earlier, how saturated the social platforms are with hard right voices. And Mike, I guess a question for you would be, are you thinking about doing anything along those lines where you can kind of show the ecosystem of the powerful voices on either side to show proportionality?
We have so much data about this right now. We have, you know, with AI, we're able to identify causes, like society causes, like, I don't know, vegan, pro-gun, pro-abortion, etc. And we already have all this information. So now what we're looking for is a good way, you know, to put it on the platform, etc. But this is definitely on a roadmap. We have so much interesting information about this. So, but that's that comes next, because people don't pay for this information right now. So right now we have to prioritize, you know, like a company, make money, we're trying to raise funds. And then
I can see you guys getting scooped up by a media company or a political whatever company, because this is super powerful, important information. And your stuff isn't just who has the most followers and that equals influence. Yours is really measuring influence. And I think that that is something that is different.
Yeah, we have medias using us, medias. A Washington Post is a customer, for instance.
Very cool.
But I think we need to go even... deeper into this industry.
Okay, I've got two more rapid fire questions for you. You get to use one emoji for the rest of your life. Which one are you going to use?
I love the one with the glass, you know, when you're like curious about something. I use it all the time.
Oh, yeah, the one
monocle.
The many shining glass, yeah, definitely.
That's a good one. I like that one too.
I like this one on the moment.
Okay. And then the last
one. There's also this one, you know, this one. When I'm unhappy with my wife, she says something I'm not happy about. I do this.
Like, I'm right away. Right away.
Perry, take it away with our last rapid fire.
But Jeremy, don't judge me too harshly here, but we ask this question of everyone because it's a fascinating, the responses are fascinating. You can either have hiccups for 3 straight months, like round the clock hiccups, or you have to chop off your own pinky. What do you choose? Do you keep the hiccups? Do you keep the finger? What's your thought process?
What's the pinky? Is this hand and finger, right? This one? No, hiccup for sure.
You would keep the hiccups?
For sure. Like, yeah. What would I want to get rid of my finger? I need it.
Ask Becca. She said she'd cut off her pinky.
Take the pinky. Take it. Take the pinky.
Hiccups.
Have you ever had hiccups for days at a time? I always tell people this. It sucks. It hurts so bad. I've lived through it. Not months, but days. It's brutal, man.
I'm a long-term person. So in the long term, I'd rather have more fingers. So
Same. I've asked my whole family this and my extended family, and literally everyone, I'm talking like 15 people, they all, including my kids, said they would cut off their pinky. And I'm just like, you would mutilate your hand rather than suffer for 3 months with a little minor inconvenience? And the answer is astonishing. I guarantee you, Jeremy, if you asked a bunch of people, a surprising number would say they would get rid of their pinky. It's bananas.
It's true.
I would say that, but when it comes to the moment where they would have their finger chopped up, I can guarantee you no one would do it.
We did have somebody on the show who basically offered to do it live on the show because he hated his pinky. So, you know, never know what you're going to get here on Under Embargo. And with that, I'm going to wrap us up and say thank you, Jeremy. This was awesome. And I feel like we could talk for many more hours about influencer marketing. And I think we should talk in 6 months again, because I think it'll be a totally different scene.
That's a very good point. Yeah. Big fan of the platform also. And just make sure that you accept the money that I'm giving you to rank me even higher. Okay.
I have one last thing. Jeremy, do you have any closing thoughts or anything you want to say to the audience or places to tell them to go?
No, just remember that even if we're about ranking, etc., just have fun. You know, like, it's not about, don't be obsessed with rankings, don't be obsessed with creating content, don't be obsessed with algorithm. What ultimately matters is having fun for everything. So,
love it.
That's how I am.
Have love fun. It. Thanks, Jeremy.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.